So I will begin by launching directly into the talk that I've prepared for today, and I will be showing you a number of examples, but I will also be playing you musical examples, and I will be toggling between my PowerPoint and a number of musical examples that I have on my desktop. So if something goes wrong, I really did try, so I'm just going to apologize in advance. Okay. Last year, during a sabbatical leave, for which I am ever grateful to the college, I traveled to Poland to gather materials for a book I am writing that is devoted exclusively to the topic of unofficial music making in the camps. At the Nazi camps, that is. At present, no such critical study exists. Moreover, the few scholars who are aware that music of this sort was created in camps other than Theresienstadt tend to misunderstand the conditions that fostered it. Specifically, the ability or inability of prisoners to engage in music creation is commonly attributed to group affiliation, be it national, political, or religious. Such constrained views of victim groups, however, obscure the fact that prisoners often had rather more complicated roles, relationships, and identities in the camps that allowed for greater interaction and the possibility to participate and share musical life. Categorical approaches, whatever the motivation, are, to be sure, not unique to Holocaust and World War II research. But the urgency to undo simplifying claims here, I think, is greater, for at stake is the memory of countless victims for whom we must now somehow speak. In this respect, my aim is also to recover the unique identities of three former prisoners who at three different camps contributed invaluably to preserving a degree of humanity and culture in a landscape that severely challenged both. Alexander Kuliszewicz at Sachsenhausen, Józef Kropiński at Buchenwald, and Krystyna Żywulska at Auschwitz-Birkenau. In doing so, I hope also to shed further light on the Nazi camp universe, keeping in mind all the complexity, intractability, and historical messiness that that word implies. But for now, a few words about Żywulska and her camp creations. Krystyna Żywulska is best known as the author of Przeżyłam Oświęcim, I Survived Auschwitz, her candid and moving account of life and death in Auschwitz-Birkenau. Published in Poland in 1946, Żywulska's memoir represents one of the earliest and most significant contributions to Polish literature on the Holocaust. Less known, but no less important, are Żywulska's songs and poetry created during her imprisonment. These works have laid dormant in neatly labeled folders in the Alexander Kuliszewicz Archive at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington for the last 15 years. Some have been tucked away further away, and longer still, in the archives of the Auschwitz Museum in Oświęcim, Poland. Their neglect is at least twofold. Musicologists until very recently have demonstrated a bias against non-professional utilitarian music, deeming songs created by ordinary prisoners in the camps as aesthetically inferior to so-called art music. Prisoners' songs, like those of Żywulska's, have also endured marginalia status because they challenge the persistent notion that prisoners were victims solely acted upon by their Nazi oppressors, a historical canard that has risen from the desire to honor the dead and a fear of undermining the enormity of the tragedy of the Holocaust. Yet these remarkable works, like those of other prisoners in numerous Nazi camps, offer valuable insight into the daily experiences and cultural activities of prisoners in captivity, sensitively reflecting simple truths and an insider's perspective on camp events in the process of their unfolding. They are, in the essence of things, critical reportage, the stuff of historical documentation. As importantly, perhaps more so, they also reveal the unlikely birth of a literary and satirical talent, a prisoner turned writer in the crucible of death. In this respect, Żywulska's camp creations also affirm art to have been, for some prisoners at least, a fundamental aspect of their humanity, a natural means to satisfy the life of the mind or comfort the heart. At times, Żywulska's creative process relies on parody song, the fastest means of generating a new musical work. In other instances, she plays the folk poet, responding spontaneously to the perverted system of the camp, out of an inner need to bear witness. Still, at other times, her work is outwardly directed. It serves to distract and console her fellow inmates by retaining a measure of normalcy. Today, I'll focus on three musical examples that demonstrate the ways in which Przywulska adjusted imaginatively, poetically, to the changing needs of her camp environment. There she is. Krystyna Przywulska was born Sonia Landau in Łódź, Poland, either on September 1st, 1914, or May 10th, 1918, depending on which sources you consult. And here begin the most basic questions concerning Przywulska's identity. Raised in an atmosphere shared by many urban Polish-speaking assimilated Jews, Przywulska's upbringing was decidedly secular. Though the family preserved some traditions around the Jewish holidays, they did not attend services at synagogue or keep kosher. Fellow writer Stefania Grodzieńska, a close friend of Przywulska's already before the war, recalls that Przywulska's mother spoke Yiddish and that she occasionally prepared savory traditional Jewish foods such as cholent. There was family music making. Przywulska's mother sang beautifully while her father played mandolin. At times, Przywulska would join them improvising at the piano. In a 1992 interview, literally a deathbed interview, with Polish scholar Barbara Engelking-Boni, Przywulska described these musical moments as her quote-unquote fondest memories. Przywulska considered herself a communist, less perhaps out of conviction than a desire to be in step with the predominant political orientation of Łódź's youth in the interwar period. As she explained to Engelking with characteristic wit, quote, "I was the sort of communist who thought, for example, that if my stockings sag like this around my ankles, then I am a really big communist. The more dirty and unkempt, the better a communist I am. When Bolek, her first fiancé, came into my life and brought me three pairs of silk stockings, something in me broke. He said, 'You'll see, when you put them on, if you don't like them, you won't wear them.' I had pretty nice legs, and when I put those stockings on and looked at them, I thought, 'Oh, damn.'" End quote. After completing a Polish language Jewish gymnasium in Łódź, Przywulska began law studies in Warsaw in 1938. She was, according to her own account, entirely unconcerned about the anti-Semitic climate at university. Following the Nazi occupation of Poland a year later, she returned home to be with her father, mother, and sister Basia, who was 8 years younger. As the Nazi persecution of Jews in Łódź grew more violent following the city's incorporation into the Third Reich, Przywulska returned to Warsaw, hoping to arrange documents that would prevent her family's relocation to the Łódź ghetto. Though her attempts to help them failed, they somehow managed to get out, making their way to Warsaw, where they were eventually relocated to the ghetto there, in 1941. Weighing the chance of survival against the certainty of deportation or death by starvation, Przywulska daringly walked out of the ghetto with her mother in broad daylight on August 26, 1942. By that time, her sister was already on the quote-unquote Aryan side. Her father she left behind so as to have a better chance of survival, a decision that tormented her until her dying day. And I can tell you that some 20 years later, in 1963, Przywulska published her account of the Warsaw Ghetto in another book called Pusta Woda, Empty Water, in part to address the burden of guilt she felt for abandoning her father. On the Aryan side, she assumed different identities, joined the Polish resistance. Eventually, as Zofia Wiśniewska, she provided aid to Jews in hiding, and to at least one German deserter by counterfeiting identity cards and documents with a Polish Gentile friend named Zosia, also named Zosia, a brunette who would later be sent with her to Birkenau. To the Nazi authorities who sought Przywulska's capture, she was known only as Blonde Zosia. June 21st, 1943, she was arrested and taken to the infamous Gestapo headquarters on Szucha Avenue in Warsaw. Under interrogation, she assumed the fictitious identity of Krystyna Przywulska so as not to implicate her fellow conspirators, From Szucha, she was transported to Pawiak prison, also in Warsaw. Then 2 months later to Auschwitz-Birkenau. She was registered in the camp on August 23, 1943, as a Polish political prisoner, number 55,908. Though according to her own account in Przeżyłam Oświęcim, she had never before written poetry, in Birkenau, Przewulska began creating verses, at first in order to endure the endless roll calls to which prisoners were subjected. Fellow inmates, eager to learn her poems, memorized and disseminated them beyond an immediate circle of friends. From among the many accounts that corroborate the impact of Przewulska's creations, actress Maria Zarembińska, a fellow survivor writing in November 1945, recalls, quote, Krystyna's poems became very popular. They were recited everywhere, literally during every free moment, in the latrine, while digging ditches, during return marches from the fields, but naturally, she says in parenthetical, but naturally only when the authorities were not close by, and in our bunks in the evening, when it seemed that a person was already so dreadfully tired that all she could do was collapse stone heavy and fall asleep. Even then, whenever it happened that a new verse came, you lifted your head, the tiredness flew away, and you listened, or you copied it down. End quote. Among the most popular was Wymarsz przez Bramę, March Out Through the Gate, which first sarcastically records the reality of marching out to labor details beyond the camp, then calls on her fellow inmates to persevere, presenting them with a vision of Liberation Day, when she and her comrades will finally have a chance to take revenge. And this is the text for Wymarsz przez Bramę. And what I'd like to do is have you follow along with the English translation, for those of you who don't speak Polish, or read Polish. And what I will do is read to you the Polish so that you can get a sense of how very musical the language is that she has selected. Bo przyjdzie wnet nasz pierwszy maj, wolności maj, swobody maj. Za krzywdę swą miliony wdów pójdą w takt pieśni, pieśni bez słów. Bo za nasz ból, udręczeń młyn, przyjść musi czyn i tylko czyn. Nadejdzie czas, że za was marsz, będziemy was w szarżach bez szarż. Bez serca rżnąć, bez końca prać, muzyka też wam będzie grać. Będziecie wyć, że macie dość, a my na złość, a my na złość. Za tyle ofiar, tyle krwi, wy zapłacicie, tylko wy. Za tyle cierpień, tyle rusk, w serca wam nóż, w kule w mózg. Za tyle bólów, tyle skarg, sztylety w pierś, bagnaty w kark. Za tyle żału, westchnień łez, niech każdy z was zdechnie jak pies. I żeby już odetchnął świat, zatrzemy po was wszelki ślad. Wtedy dopiero się rozśpiewa w rytmie wolności lewa, lewa. It is a powerful, empowering poem, and it is easy to understand why so many women would have risked their lives to recite or write it down, even with its left-leaning message. The poem does nothing less than cunningly usurps control of the Nazis' very own sadistic, ubiquitous, deafening march to deliver a potent message of revenge. It is a march turned against its master, its rhythmical words a bold reclaiming of the camp's acoustic space. But Wymarsz could not have been written were it not for an earlier Przewulska poem, Apel, Roll Call, that in large part saved her life. A well-positioned, quote-unquote, older prisoner named Wala Konopska, camp number 13,156, and here's the only picture I have, unfortunately, of Wala. She survived the death march, but died very tragically just a couple of months later. So, an older prisoner named Wala Konopska heard the poem and, so struck by its honesty and insight, sought out its author, offering protection to a near-death Przewulska by placing her in the sauna, the central shower and disinfecting building, where Przewulska registered prisoners. It was an indoor commando. So, Wala Konopska, who was an older prisoner, meaning someone who had been there much longer, had one of the better positions in the camp and was able to place prisoners who she felt needed protection. Unfortunately, Przewulska soon fell sick with typhus and found herself in the camp hospital. Once more, Konopska intervened, giving her illegally obtained so-called heart medication, something that Przewórska refers to as zaszczyk na sercowy, likely a shot of glucose or adrenaline, which all but ensured her survival. In a questionnaire returned to the journalist Aleksander Kuliszewicz in 1965, Przewórska explained, quote, "If I survived typhus, it was only thanks to an injection I alone received in the barrack during my so-called night of crisis. Vala Konopska obtained the heart injection, and it was determined that I, as a camp poet, would get it." By that time, Konopska, who worked in the Aufnahmebüro, a branch of the Politische Abteilung, or Camp Gestapo, knew Przewórska was Jewish. The camp command had called Przewórska in for questioning during the first phase of her illness with typhus. But Konopska was determined to save her camp poet. Conspiring with fellow Politische Abteilung worker Leon Krupa, who was also a part of the camp's AK underground organization, to destroy Przewórska's interrogation records. And AK stands for Armia Krajowa, which is the home army in translation. And this was the dominant Polish resistance movement during the war. They had their own network also within certain camps. After Przewórska survived the worst of her illness and was released from the hospital in February 1944, Konopska placed her in the Effekten Kammer Kommando. Her poet, for the time being, would continue to write. Work in the Effekten Kammer, the storage facilities for personal effects confiscated from arriving prisoners, was considered among the best in the camp. Prisoners assigned to this type of labor squad were safeguarded against harsh physical work outdoors and had ample opportunity to illegally obtain food, clothing, and other valuables. After April 1944, when they were relocated to B2G camp, they lived together in less crowded barracks, were allowed to wear civilian clothes under their uniforms, of course, but to keep warm, and were released from both roll calls and selections. Yet for all of their privilege, the Effekten Kammer workers, located directly adjacent to Crematorium 4, could not escape the sight, screams, and stench of the relentless daily mass killings taking place just a few yards away. Here I'm going to show you a map of the Birkenau camp. And just so that you can orient yourself, this broken line here is the arriving platform, the rampa. This is where the prisoners first came in by train, and they walked the length of this. Those, and this was predominantly Jews, of course, intended for immediate murder, were walked this way and up this path, were then, their stuff was confiscated in the sauna, and they were taken directly to the gas chambers and then the crematoria. Przewórska, when she first got to the camp, was located here in B1A, B1A, which was where the women's barracks were. This was another part that was also women, but from all of the women who Przewórska knew and whose testimonies we have, they were all located in here. This was also one of the camp hospitals located in one of these barracks in this row here. Initially, the Effekten Kammer was located in one of these three barracks. And then in 44, it got moved to this whole complex here called B2G or Betzfage. And this was in camp lingo referred to as Brzezinka, which is confusing because Brzezinka is also the Polish word for Birkenau. But to the camp inmates, Brzezinka referred only to this segment of the camp. And this was devoted exclusively to mass killing. Now, to give you a sense of orientation, she literally did live in a barrack that was yards away. This is Crematorium 4, Crematorium 5. This was the barrack that the women lived in. And all of these barracks were parts of the Effekten Kammer. The men who worked in the men's Effekten Kammer were located in one of these barracks. So it was the only section of the camp where the women and the men lived in barracks that were not separated by barbed wire. And all of this personal effects were stored in this row of barracks, to give you an orientation. The only thing that separated these barracks from these two crematoria was just a simple was a simple barbed wire. So that's just a little bit of orientation to give you a sense of just how isolated this Effectenkammer Kommando was from the rest of the camp and the work that they were doing. While it allowed them extraordinary privilege relative to other prisoners, was probably one of the most horrifying places to be located in the camp, precisely at the time, by the way, that the greatest amount of killing happened at Birkenau, the period from the early part of 44 to the very end of the summer, beginning of September, was when they, the Nazis brought in the most amount of transports and killed the most amount of people at Auschwitz in any given time. And then as they had to retreat, starting in the fall of 44, they abandoned the camps. Other things happened. But it was by far the most horrifying and relentless time to be anywhere near this section of the camp, because you were daily exposed to mass murder. Now, Przybylska also could not escape the constant fear of her Jewish identity being discovered by her fellow inmates. Though this mattered none to Vala Konopska, it was not at all clear to Przybylska that her fellow workers in the Effectenkammer Kommando would be as sympathetic. As Przybylska recalls, quote, "I was afraid. I was not only a Jew, but then I was also a communist. Nothing could be worse, right? And all my girlfriends were from the AK, the Armia Krajowa. I thought they knew that I am a Pole, that they didn't know that I am a Jew, and that fear made me take care that no one would know. I had to scheme, think what I will do, what I will come up with, end quote. Lifelong friend and fellow survivor Wanda Marosanyi states that already in the camp, she knew Przybylska was Sonia Landau, but, quote, "in the camp, such things had absolutely no meaning among girlfriends," end quote. Another friend and fellow survivor Anna Palarczyk explains, quote, "somehow we knew about this, I'm not sure how, but no one talked about this. She was Krysia, and that was it," end quote. Edwarda Sternberg-Powicki, who worked with Przybylska in the Effectenkammer, also claims she somehow knew that Przybylska was Jewish, but that such distinctions among girlfriends did not matter at all. She also added that no one spoke about the reasons for anyone's imprisonment, because there was always the fear that someone might be an informant. Thus, it is clear that for everyone involved, there was a great deal of risk associated with Przybylska's identity. Otherwise, Przybylska's girlfriends certainly would have let her know that she had nothing to fear about her Jewishness, that her secret was safe with them. But for Przybylska, there was also the impossible condition of witnessing the mass murder of fellow Jews at close range, and the private fear of being found out to be one of them, a double horror shared only by a number of other Jewish inmates who had found themselves in similar circumstances. It was under these circumstances that Przybylska wrote some of her most provocative poems. Wycieczka w nieznane, Excursion into the Unknown, is one such work. Written during the summer of 1944, it very poignantly juxtaposes the peaceful sounds and images of nature and life beyond the camp with the grotesque, death-ridden environment of Birkenau. Like other works by Przybylska, Excursion into the Unknown rapidly spread through the camp, finding its way eventually to Auschwitz I. There, inmate Krzysztof Jaździński, presumably moved by the content of the poem and wishing to preserve it, set it to music, modifying when necessary Przybylska's text to fit the alternating melodies of the international hits Santa Lucia and Gloomy Sunday. While Przybylska's dark, ballad-like poem of an astonishing 154 lines effectively registers with characteristic irony and sarcasm the approach of innocent victims toward the gas chambers and crematoria of Birkenau, and here she casually but deliberately identifies those victims as Jews, the musical setting significantly enhances the text's provocation. Unfortunately, I have been unable to find a recording of this work, though there is material to suggest that at least one fragment once existed in the Kuliszewicz archive. Instead, I will play for you two covers of these songs. The first, Santa Lucia, recorded by Enrico Caruso in 1916 and reissued on Victor Records in 1931. The second, Ostatnia Smutna Niedziela, the Polish language version of Hungarian Resho's Szeres Szomorú Vasárnap. Very, very popular song, as we all know from knowing Gloomy Sunday, even in English. In Poland, it was recorded and popularized by Mieczysław Fog during the summer of 1935. I will ask that you follow along with Przywulska's text, which I've abridged so that you may hear how it scans to the music. But first, I feel like I have to provide you with a bit of information on Santa Lucia and Gloomy Sunday in order to better understand the associations that may have inspired Jasiński's particular musical choices. Santa Lucia, a traditional Neapolitan song first popularized during the later 19th century, celebrates the picturesque waterfront area of Santa Lucia in the Bay of Naples. Boats on the water sail softly, driven by gentle breezes and illumined by the moon. The image is serene, and the boatman, who the singer's voice represents, moved by the beauty of it all, invites people to take a turn in his boat, the better to enjoy the evening. Laszlo Jávor's 1933 Hungarian text for Gloomy Sunday, loosely translated into Polish by Timoteusz Ortym, pseudonym Makors, expresses it in altogether different sentiment. While it, too, is an invitation, it is not an invitation to delight, but rather to grief, one so resonant that only death by suicide can silence it. Gloomy Sunday and Santa Lucia, then, musically depict the two opposing calls of Birkenau to which Przywulska's unwitting guests are responding, the one truthful and morbid, the other a beautiful, sinister lie. In this respect, the scenic detail of the two songs selected by Jasiński only serve to enhance the rich pictorial quality of Przywulska's stark documentary ballad. And I'm going to show you the text now. It is a very, very long poem that alternates in Jasiński's musical version of it. It alternates Przywulska's text between Santa Lucia and Gloomy Sunday. Santa Lucia, Gloomy Sunday. So it creates this sharp contrast about what's reality and what's a lie. So it begins with Santa Lucia, and this is the text. Where you see my brackets is where the music you'll hear doesn't scan to the text. So you have to omit wherever I've bracketed as you're listening to the song and the melody. Also, there are repeat signs to indicate that the last verses are repeated, so follow along to the music. And then what I'll do is I will play for you the very end of the poem, which ends on Gloomy Sunday, and you can see how that scans to the music as well.
Oh,
Now, let me play for you the following. This is the end of the poem to the tune of Gloomy Sunday. Verses by Przywulska were from their inception conceived for singing and for consolation. Wiązanka's Effektenkammer, medley from the Effektenkammer, among the lengthiest compositions to survive the camps, is a string of 54 song fragments set to an array of Polish folk songs and pre-war popular tunes. Typed on 7 pages, decorated with multicolored drawings by fellow inmate Zofia Bratro, and signed by 72 prisoners, Przywulska's Wiązanka was presented as a name day card to Block Capo Maria Grzeszewska on September 8, 1944. Corresponding melodies are indicated at the head of each of Przywulska's songs, and according to archival sources, the entire Wiązanka was also performed for Capo Maria by 4 inmates, including Przywulska. The inscription on the title page affectionately reads, quote, "For our dear Maria on her name day, from all of those with whom she shared the good and the bad, and whom she helped to endure as a memento," end quote. Although time does not allow a more thorough examination of this remarkable document, a brief perusal reveals an extensive repertoire of internationally popular tangos, foxtrots, and waltzes, well-known Polish folk melodies, as well as tunes and texts borrowed from Polish patriotic and scout songs. In this respect, it is a detailed record, a summary, if you will, of pre-war popular music culture in Poland, essentialized into snapshot form. And here I'll give you the first page. It is also an intimate account of lives lived in Birkenau. Józefa Drewnik, mother of 7 children, mentioned here, Irena Orchowska, who showed affection for a prisoner who was bald, here, Nela Jarosławska, otherwise known as Sawaczyńska, creator of culinary surprises dreamed up from stolen bits of food, mentioned here. And Przewulska, self-described writer of situational verse, mentioned here. Wanda Romik, who was a philosopher on love. And of course, Maria Grzeszewska, the kind-hearted dedicatee. These women and many others, prisoners all, were allowed for a moment to be vibrant individuals, not merely numbers. Here I'm going to play you fellow survivors from the Effektenkammer Kommando, Irena Wisniewska at 94 and Alina Dombrowska, 92, sing one of the couplets about finding a bit of hanky-panky behind the storage sacks to the tune of a well-known Polish 19th century soldier song called Wizja Schildwacha. And I'm going to play it for you now. I'm just going to do this funny slow thing where I'll give you a blow-up and a translation. There. Okay.
Jak to miło, jak obok chłopaki, chłopaki aż drżą. Jak się czule przybliżam do niego, przemili są ci panowie z efektu męskiego. Wacek, to jest ten Wacek.
They're remembering one of the boys who Przewulska, like, she's like, oh, Wacek. She's writing about Wacek. Anyway, okay. Okay, and I just wanted to give you a little picture of Irena and Alina. This I took of them in Alina's garden last summer when I was still in Poland, and they sang for me the verses, the couplets that they remembered from the Wiązanka. And here, too, let me just go through very quickly and show you the final three pages of this Wiązanka. You can see the extraordinary detail. And each one of those couplets is about another prisoner who they worked with in the Effektenkammer Kommando. And there is the sort of promise of getting home, finally. Przewulska's texts in this medley depart dramatically from the sober reportage of excursion into the unknown, the urgent need there to psychologically process mass murder. So lighthearted and playful are those short characterizations of Przewulska's Effektenkammer friends that one could mistake them for something created in an entirely different setting than a death camp. Indeed, after the war, Przewulska herself was reluctant to disseminate the work, wary of the possibility that uninitiated readers would draw the wrong conclusions about life as a prisoner in Birkenau. She tried to explain the frivolous nature of her medley in a letter to Kuliszewicz written in 1976, quote, based on medley from the Effektenkammer, written in haste and created in circumstances that were absolutely exceptional, it is easy to imagine Auschwitz an idol. You get the sense at times that the text was written at a boarding school for young ladies. The medley was, for me, an exchange of gratitude, a way to make myself and others believe that freedom will come. We had no idea by what miracle and what that word meant. We only wished to find ourselves beyond the barbed wire. A naive, sentimental expression of our longings and one of many attempts to disconnect ourselves from the realities of the camp. Illusions, for us, were indispensable, even if expressed in the most primitive form, so that we could stand hell. Out of this and other factors arose my attempts to find some sort of an island where our melancholy thoughts could be, quote-unquote, anchored with the help of escaping to familiar Schlager refrains, end quote. Written in haste in order to meet the localized demand for an escapist name day celebration, the shifting texts of medley register kaleidoscopically the everyday world of the Effektenkammer. But they also lead consolingly to visions of future happiness, to life after captivity. In its overt sentimentality and its wonderful moments of humor, the medley powerfully records the optimism and encouragement Przewulska shared with her fellow inmates an energy both Alina and Irena, in their interview with me, confirmed emphatically as they astonishingly recalled from memory their favorite couplets written so many years earlier. Toward the end of 1944, Przybylska also composed one other parody song that I am aware of called Marsz o Wolności, March of Freedom. For the song's music, Przybylska borrowed the tune from a popular Soviet mass song, Moskva Maiskaya, Moscow in May, composed by Dmitri and Daniel Pokras in 1937. The duo, by the way, was also responsible for the melody that would become the partisans' hymn of the Jewish partisans of Vilna. The original text was written by Vasily Lebedev-Kulmach. Presumably, Przybylska first encountered this song before imprisonment. I will play you now a fragment performed by Buchikov and Nachayev and recorded around 1937. And you can follow along with an English translation of Moskva Maiskaya. Sure, write a tune. I love that. Sorry, it's my inner communist coming out. Okay. And now I'll play for you a fragment of Przybylska's camp version, remembered and performed by survivor Stanisława Gąskowa, née Lampart. And here is her test. Like I said, this is just a fragment that she remembered for Kuliszewicz before he died. He was interviewing survivors and having them sing their songs. So this comes from the Kuliszewicz archive.
Takie miejsce jest na świecie, to nie bajka ani sen, którym dzieje się, czy wiecie, wiele makabrycznych scen. Pięć kominów dymi górą, jak zaklęty jakiś czar. Krew z kominów gnie purpurą, to przeklęte Birkenau. Więc pasy zdejm, więc strepy zrzuć. La 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 la. Żegnaj straszny Oświęcimiu i przeklęte Birkenau. Wiatr tylko na drutach będzie żałosną pieśń grał.
Tobie grał. Aha, rozumiem.
Okay. Given that Przybylska's parody of the song follows closely the sentiments and images conveyed in the original, bewilderment prompted by an awesome architectural landscape, the crimson of a Kremlin sunrise and the crimson of blood, the permanence and comfort of home in the refrain, it seems likely that she wrote it to meet an immediate demand for music that could provide communal uplift. Just a few months later, March of Freedom was sung by prisoners, including Przybylska, during their forced evacuation from Birkenau. Przybylska escaped from this so-called death march on January 18, 1945. The exact number of Przybylska's camp poems and songs remains uncertain, but at least 32 complete texts survive. All are invariably marked by a vivid realism, some also by a quality of direct and sober reportage. And while sarcasm and irony prevail, Przybylska's compositions seldom lapse into despair. Rather, they most often exude life, specifically Przybylska's own will to live, and deliver a powerful message of resistance. that several of these creations have survived in numerous variants with alternate titles and accompanying music is a testament to their widespread popularity and the profound impact they made on the inmate populations of Auschwitz and Birkenau. Wanda Marosani and Anna Palarczyk, Irena Wisniewska, Alina Dąbrowska, and Edwarda Powicki all confirm that her works were highly prized. After the war, Żywulska remained in Poland, married Leon Andrzejewski, a prominent official of the Urząd Bezpieczeństwa, the communist secret police, and she had two sons, one who turned out not to be Leon's. Her post-war life was as extraordinary as her wartime survival and certainly merits its own detailed discussion. But so as to hit the basics in the time that is left, she worked as a writer, mostly of satire, contributing pieces to the magazine Szpilki and fashioning satirical monologues commissioned by illustrious Polish actors such as Alina Janowska, as well as directly for Polish radio. She was also a successful songwriter. In 1968, her Żyje się raz, You Live Once, music by Adam Markiewicz, became an instant hit in Poland when it was debuted by the Polish chanteuse Sława Przybylska, another Holocaust survivor, incidentally. While it is easy to understand the appeal of the song, the timeless narrative of love, love lost, and perseverance nonetheless, a swirling, intoxicating triple meter waltz matched artfully to the repetition of the turnaround Żyje się raz, a fabulous voice. To know its author's life is to understand and appreciate the song's meaning that much more deeply. Its poetic candor is nothing less than a natural continuation of a verse style that Żywulska gave life to in Birkenau. It is Żywulska's credo, one formed by a life of risks taken over and over again. Here is the beginning.
Ładny chłopiec z profilu i en face. Niech mnie rozczula, niech mnie przytula, bo żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Jak wiadomo, nie stoi w miejscu czas. Trwało niedługo i znalazł drugą, bo żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Jak fałszywie zadźwięczał jego bas. Wybacz, kochanie, co pożegnanie. Cóż, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Pomyślałam, odkręcić może gaz. Tęskni, wzdycham, żal mi do licha, bo żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Gra jak w kartach, to dwójka, a tam as. Czasem tak bywa, że ktoś wygrywa, więc żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Czy z rąk pustych, czy z pełnych złota kas. Ból spływa częściej, a rzadziej szczęście, choć żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz. Drzewa kwitną i wiecznie szumi las. Słońce gra cieniem, miłość cierpieniem. A żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się raz, żyje się tylko raz.
Isn't that amazing? I'm in love with Sława Przybylska. Okay. I love her voice. I got to meet her too. That was very exciting. Okay. Sorry. In 1970, Przybylska moved to Düsseldorf to be with her sons who had earlier emigrated to the West as a result of the 1968 anti-Semitic campaigns in Poland. Asked by Barbara Engelking near the end of her life whether Krystyna was her true name, she replied, quote, "In my life, when it comes to such topics, there is nothing true, my dear," end quote. But in truth, she was Zosia, the diminutive of Zofia, not Sonia, and she was that to family and friends from before the war. Krysia to her friends who survived Birkenau. They loved her all the same. She died on August 1, 1992, buried in Germany as Zofia Przybylska Andrzejewski. Those who had been closest to her, both family and friends, remember Przybylska as a woman who loved to laugh, sing, and jest. Perhaps befitting a woman endowed with such optimism and spirit, as well as a gift for pictorial description, in the last decade of her life, without training and with impressive success, Przybylska took up painting, fulfilling a lifelong desire. Thank you.